Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
8 seconds remain. Free puck there. Sent into the zone. Kemper just fights it off as the puck is wide in front of the net. Now, did we have a whistle before time ran out?
Oh, that pass went right across or bounced over Bonino's stick. He's right on top of the crease. That was the last ditch effort.
This one is over, and the Predators could not overcome the 3-goal deficit they dug for themselves.
It's obviously the ideal world. We would have won every game throughout this whole playoffs, but that's obviously not going to happen. We're just looking forward. We can't do anything about game one now. We're just looking to game two. We'll have a good day tomorrow, see what we did well, what we can do better. There's no time to think about what could have happened. We're just ready for game two.
A tough start for the Nashville Predators in game one of their qualifying round series against the Arizona Coyotes. Welcome into Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley, alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, Marquise Munson. Fellas, what's going on?
The excitement has died. Go away, sports.
Immediately.
That's enough sports for us. See you later.
See you later, sports. It was a good run while it lasted.
What a great weekend.
Huh? It was a great weekend. That's the thing.
Weekend.
The Predators could not ruin what a great weekend it was to be a sports fan. They tried, but they did not ruin it.
That first period was rough. Rough. Down 3-0 in the first period. And really it all started with Joe, and you and I were talking about this a minute ago. Maybe the craziest goal I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was just, I think Oliver Ekman Larson was the one who shot it. It went off of Kyle Turris, was going literally 12 feet wide, and then went off of the shoulder of Matt Duchene over the top of Juuse Saros. And that was when I was like, oh, boy, that's not good. And the Predators completely fell apart in the first period for about 12 minutes after that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I guess technically I timed it out. I went back, and it was about 11 minutes of just terrible hockey. Jared Tenorti takes a penalty right on the faceoff, cross-check. Gets called for interference. Terrible penalty by Matt Duchene. He gets blasted and just yanks. I think it was Clayton Keller.
Yeah.
Just grabs him. Johansson takes a bad one. They are outshot 12-1 in that stretch. And if you're going to have stretches like that, when you're the more experienced team, the better team, a team playing against – a team, by the way, missing its leading regular season scorer and a very important player, Nick Schmaltz, and you're just going to fall apart like that, well, then it's going to be a quick stay.
Yeah, no question about it. And look, the Predators, to their credit, made it a game in the third period. They're down 4-1 after Michael Grabner has a shorthanded goal in the second period. And you're thinking to yourself, well, okay, there's game one right there. But all of a sudden, Predators score very quickly into the third period. It's 4-2. They fight back on the power play. Forsberg scores another one to make it 4-3. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, they've got a chance here. They had another power play opportunity where I was pretty sure, Joe, I was like, hey, the way their power play is rolling right now, they're going to score. Just didn't quite have enough to get it done at the end. Played well in the third period, but it just, to me, watching that game yesterday, Joe, and we've talked all last week about, you know, the progress in training camp, how it's a fresh start for a lot of these guys. To me, that game yesterday felt like about 55 games I had watched of the Predators earlier in this regular season, where they got stretches where they look really good, and then stretches where the veteran team that we think they are and the experience and the talent, all of these things, they just completely fall off the table. That's exactly what they look like yesterday. It's pretty much everything they look like in the regular season to me.
Right. They did not handle, I hate the word, it's used way too much in sports. And I think now especially it's a word that's like, should we be using that? But it is adversity. It's sports adversity. We need another word for that. I need to go like the thesaurus.com and find something else for it. But
let's do that.
They didn't handle the tough stuff that happened to them, and it was like they panicked. And I think that, yeah, you can take some positives out of the second and third period. There were other times this year, we talked about this a lot, right, the lack of pushback for this team. So they showed pushback. But, you know, it's a 3-goal deficit. You know, it's the worst lead in hockey, Robbie.
Yeah, that 3 goals, you got to watch out for it.
Lead, you know?
Never want to be up by 3.
Hate that lead. But it does. It makes it, one team is desperate, and the Preds were desperate. And, of course, one team is going to be conservative and playing a lot more defense. And that's just how it was. So I don't put a lot into that. You're right. The thing is, if you just take away, for as good as Forsberg was yesterday with those 2 goals, you know how aggressive they are on the penalty kill. And, man, that telegraph pass that led to the breakaway, if you just take that play out of it, it might be a different result. One mistake from a veteran star player who, again, if you don't have him, you're not in the game at all. But it's those mistakes and just some terrible mistakes in the defensive zone, letting Taylor Hall just roam free on their second goal. It's and then their power play goal to make it 3-0. Just Clayton Keller just sitting there in the slot. No one bothers to be near him.
Yeah, and I'm going to get into a little bit of that a little bit later. I've got a couple areas of what the Predators did yesterday that I'm almost at my wit's end with this group about a certain part of their game. We're going to get into that a little bit later. I think the casual observer, maybe you watch the game yesterday, or maybe you just look at the box score, and you see 4 goals given up, and you immediately point to the goaltender. You look at UC Saros and say, probably not the best game. Maybe need to go back with Pekka in game 2. Well, first off, I look at the first goal, and it's just weird. Maybe the weirdest NHL goal I've ever seen in my life. And I had a lot of people tweet me, well, if Pekka was in net, he'd have stopped that because he's taller.
Pekka's head would have stopped that, Robbie.
Well, yeah, probably. It probably would have. That's not exactly the goal that you plan for when you're making your decision of who's going to start in goal or not. So I just kind of watched that one away. The other two in the first period, I mean, it'd be nice if somebody played defense at some point on those 2 goals. Fourth one, even though it's a bad pass, it's a breakaway, that's kind of a save that you want your goalie to make.
Yeah.
And, you know, a high-pressure situation, you really need a save right there. I understand it's a very difficult task to ask when you got a breakaway. They're all by themselves. They're coming down. It's Michael Grabner. He's done that 1,000 times in his career.
Nice move going to the back.
Nice move. It was a great move. But I could see where you say, hey, you got to have a save there. So I'll listen to that one. All in all, I didn't put much of it on UC Saros yesterday. Actually thought he made a couple of really good saves in the second period and early in the third there to keep them in the game.
Yes, I agree. It's not about that. I know it's way overdone in hockey. Just didn't give the goalie enough help. It's not on him. And sometimes it's like, yeah, but nah, you got to stop some of these pucks. I not the case here. I don't even think I know that it's a question. Tracy Myers, friend, great job covering hockey for a long time. Asked the question. It's a question that has to be asked. It's going to be asked again. Who are you going with in game two? But I and John Hines wouldn't, you know, didn't say, and I'm not surprised by that. But I don't think it's going to be a big decision here. UC Saros did not do anything to lose the job. I do think where they are right now, obviously not knowing what's going to happen in game two, there's a pretty good chance that if I had to guess right now the sequence, I would guess Saros, and then I would guess that Rene does come out for game three. We'll see. Maybe Saros shuts him out, and he doesn't have to expend a lot of energy in game two, and they just roll, and it's like, okay, well, why are you going to mess with that? I think that's the only way. I think otherwise, well, certainly if they lose, I think it's like, okay, Pekka, save the whole thing.
Yeah.
And even if they win, and let's say he plays well, they win, I think there's a good chance that we end up seeing Pekka. We'll see. I could be wrong, but that's just my guess here.
Yeah, and look, I got the looking at a bunch of stats yesterday, which I do, and I think heading into this weekend in best of five series in the NHL, because if you've watched the NHL long enough, they used to have best of five series, and I think it's been literally since the 1980s was the last time they've had.
Early
90s, somewhere in that area was the last time they had best of five series. But I think Thomas Willis of the Predators put this out heading into the weekend. And the teams that win game one of a best of five in the NHL were 68-15 all time, which is roughly 82%. So, look, we talked all week about how big game one's going to be, whether it's a seven-game series, five-game series especially. Now the Predators are behind the eight ball, and you hear it happen all the time in baseball when they play in their opening round series in baseball. You lose game one, you got to win three out of four after that, and that's a daunting task, and that's what the Predators are now faced with. So, look, I didn't think that they just got totally blown out of the water. I thought when they could stay out of the box, which that's another thing, just the undiscipline that they had, lack of discipline in that first period especially, was just unbelievable to me. I mean, it's we talked about being a veteran team, experienced. You've been in these high-pressure situations before. And if you were a fan that had never watched the game before and you were kind of like hand-selecting which team you thought was poised and under control and had more experience yesterday, they would not have picked the Predators. It would have been the Coyotes in a landslide. You mentioned Duchesne as an awful penalty. Johansson got a retaliatory penalty. I know why you do it. He got taken down and he got face washed on the ice. I get it. It's frustrating. Just take the power play at that point and move on. There's no reason to cross-check him in the back.
That was a weird – no, I agree, and that was a weird play too, because like they didn't blow the whistle. I don't know why. Like, I don't think there was going to be anything. He got lucky that they called him both.
I know. Like, if you go back and watch the replay, I don't even remember who the player was for the Coyotes, but he took him down, got the face wash on Johansson. Johansson gets back up, and nothing's been called. The ref is sitting there looking right at it,
and then
Johansson cross checks him in the back, and the hand comes up, and you're thinking to yourself, oh boy. They're going to be on
the short-handed. Like the ref's like, yeah, I guess I'll call them both.
I'll call both.
No, you're so right. By the way, 87, good call. Last time they had best of five, 86-87. No, I mean, it's – and the thing is, the penalty kill did a great job. I mean, they scored one – other than the one really bad job they did.
Sure.
It was a huge goal. But for most of the day, it was like, wow, they stepped up. But if you're killing that many penalties – Look what that does to you. How that strains you, how that keeps you from trying to get back into a game. They still did. But imagine if you just cut that down to three or four penalties taken.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have six penalties, you are spending so much energy and you're just so discombobulated just dealing with that. It just takes a big chunk of the game away that you can even do anything with.
Yeah, like I think I saw a tweet yesterday, maybe by Justin Bradford, who I think they're halfway through the second period. And Craig Smith had like 4 minutes and 30 seconds of ice time because they spent so much time on the penalty kill that 5-on-5 in the power play, they just couldn't get out there. I mean, you're totally out of rhythm at that point. So it's not even just, you know, the penalty kill putting you at a disadvantage from the standpoint of, hey, they might score here. They got a decent chance to score here on the power play. It's just totally throwing you out of rhythm. And the Predators, I thought, never really found their rhythm yesterday until the third period when you're down three goals. And like you said, Joe, you know, Arizona's kind of sitting back, in trying to protect the league, and you're throwing everything you got at them. I mean, that's kind of, that's what it boiled down to me in the third period.
Yeah, like the Preds afterward, you know, they felt good about how they played later, but it's like, to me, situationally, I just don't put too much into that. That's just how it's going to be. Of course, you're the desperate team. Yes, I give them credit for not doing what they did in the regular season a lot of times, which was just totally just pack it up when things didn't go well. But my gosh, it's the playoffs, and you've been waiting to play for 4 months, so I sure hope you're going to come to play. But the first period, not handling the bad things that happened to them was really disappointing.
When we come back, why do the Predators seem to get mentally rattled so easily with this veteran group? We'll talk about that a little bit next. Also, I got a couple thoughts that I want to get into about the style in which they played yesterday. Take your reaction as well. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, I think our group was really mentally and emotionally tough today. You know, I think you look back, you're playing from behind. We had a tough bounce on the first goal. And then I thought that did give Arizona some energy, and they put us on our heels a little bit in that situation. So, you know, I think that specifically is another example of something that goes that we have to discuss going in, is that, you know, you have to have a stronger response after a goal against, whether it's a fluky goal or a really good goal, whatever it is. There's going to be some ups and downs in the game. So I think we can handle that time after that goal against better than we did. But I also like the fact of the way we responded throughout the game and continued to push and stay mentally tough. We were engaged on the bench. You know, we gave ourselves a chance to get back in the game. And unfortunately, when we made a hard push in the third, you know, we had some really good looks. And unfortunately, tonight they didn't go in.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the Game 1 loss yesterday at the hands of the Arizona Coyotes. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. And Joe, I look at what happened in the game yesterday and listen to a little bit of what Hines had to say there. And I agree to a point that emotionally they were tough in that game, mentally, I guess, to battle back in the third period. But I also look at it from this point of view, and I look at some of the penalties they took, some of the decisions they made, and mentally, you know, these penalties especially. Duchesne takes an open ice hit, gets crushed, responds to it by grabbing somebody's leg. I mean, the puck's not even there. He's going after the puck in the corner, and you grab his leg. Like, it's just a stupid penalty. It was just a needless penalty. Johansson cross-checking somebody in the back, you know, after he's been taken down, a penalty of frustration. You know, they called one on Grimaldi on hooking Taylor Hall. I had less of a problem with that one, mainly because I looked at the replay and it's hard to find a hook in there, but that is what it is. It's just, you look at this group, and especially with some of these guys that have either been with the Preds for a long time or have been in the league a long time and have a lot of experience, like Johansson, like Duchesne, like Forsberg, and you wonder, why does this happen with this group on a semi-regular basis, that something bad happens to them, like that first goal that got scored yesterday that was so fluky, and then they just go through this 10-minute stretch where they look like they've never played hockey together before and totally unravel. That's what happened yesterday. It's not the first time that's happened. You know, our friend Ryan Porth just texted me with about 12 examples of that happening throughout the playoffs before, where things just spiral out of control. That's got to quit happening with this group. And you point to leadership. Like, at what point, if you're Roman Josi or Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, do you look around on the bench and say, hey, enough is enough. Start playing hockey. Yeah, something bad happened. Forget about it and move on. And that's been a problem all season long with this group. And it's a problem, quite frankly, that I have searched and searched for answers for, and I just can't. I have no idea why this team sometimes, when things go wrong, they just totally fall apart.
Yeah, the leadership thing's interesting. You know, I think Roman Josi, and when things go poorly, I think people naturally look at the captain.
Right.
And especially, I think, when people compare it to Shea Weber, because Shea Weber is the classic big, scary, tough guy captain who's going to, you know, maybe not talk a lot, but he'll command the room when he does. And Roman Josi's not that guy.
No.
I also think if you're a guy who's a great player and you're, you know, it's always the, you know, best player on your team, you want him to be the hardest worker, and you do your part and you get along with everyone, you can be a good, effective captain. So I struggle with, like, does this have to do with that? I don't know. But
yeah, I don't think it has that.
Okay, so you're just talking about just all the veterans. I mean, look, Ryan Ellis, we haven't mentioned yet. Ryan Ellis is on the ice for all three of those goals in the first period. Now, yeah. Granted, whoever was on the ice for the first one, that was just a weird one.
Yeah.
But Ryan Ellis just let Taylor Hall go. Just let him go. And I looked at that play over and over again, and I'd love to be in the room with John Hines to hear, you know, the breakdown of that, because at first I thought Arvidsson let him go. But no, I mean, Ellis got mixed up apparently, went to Dvorak, who Josi was already with him, and Taylor Hall's just alone with the puck behind the net. You're dead now. So there's one. And then Clayton Keller in the power play. It's either Ryan Ellis or Bonino both go to the net and let him sit there in the slot and just whack away. I mean, to me, Ryan Ellis, and I know he got a goal later, but he's been on the ice and in situations like that for a lot of these big goals against this team in the postseason.
He has. And look, this brings me to a little bit of what I want to get to today. If you saw me on Twitter yesterday, there was a pretty consistent theme of what's going on with this group that I've got a problem with. And that's part of it, what you just brought up there, is just letting people go to the front of the net or sit in the middle of the ice with no resistance. And I think Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, they are a fantastic defense pairing. We said last week, I've seen a lot of defense pairings play here. I've seen a lot of good seasons with Weber and Suter, Ekholm, Ellis. I would put this season Josi and Ellis had together right up there with any of them, probably the best. I think when they were together, they were outstanding this year. One thing they have really struggled with, especially in the playoffs, you can point to last year against Dallas, you can point to the Winnipeg series, and you can point to yesterday.
You can point to 2017 too, by the way.
Yes.
Keep going.
Just letting people stand there with no punishment. Dvorak stood there yesterday on that second goal by Arizona. He took four whacks at the puck. Nobody ever touched him. Clayton Keller on the third goal by Arizona was standing all by himself in the slot. Like, what do you think your goalie's going to do there? They're not going to stop that puck. And it's just, it's baffling to me that on that side of the puck, you're letting people get to the middle of the ice with no pushback, no resistance whatsoever. And then conversely, on the other side of the ice, they will not go the middle of the ice. It just won't happen. And I think back to that goal by Ryan Ellis. And I got to thinking yesterday, you know, when watching Arizona play the way that they played, I thought back to the Dallas series last year. What was the big takeaway from the Dallas series? Predators could not get inside. Dallas did a great job of keeping them to the outside. They couldn't get in and create some of those scoring chances that you have to create this time of year if you want to score. And I got to thinking to myself, I want to say these guys are unwilling and unable to go there. But then I see something happen like the Ellis goal, which is not a great shot by Ryan Ellis. He just puts it on net, and Arvidsson and Forsberg are in front of the net, and it goes in.
Yeah.
Now, I realize it's a lot easier said than done to just say, hey, get to the middle of the ice. I understand that. There's a lot that goes into it. But put your freaking shoulder down and get to the middle of the ice. There is no reason Philip Forsberg can't get to the middle of the ice. There is no reason Ryan Johansson cannot put his shoulder down and get to the middle of the ice. And the lack of ability or willingness to do that on a consistent basis with this group, and specifically this group's core players and core forwards, if that continues to happen, you got to break it up. If they are not willing to pay the price to score the type of goals that you're going to have to score in the playoffs, you're going to have to commit to playing ugly against this Arizona team, just like you're going to have to commit to playing ugly to play against Dallas, and they did not do that last year. If you can't score that way, you're not going to win.
Well, Dallas last year, I agree with everything you just said, but Dallas last year not only kept them to the outside and just basically just silenced everyone but Rocco Grimaldi, but then they beat up their defensemen too in the defensive zone for the Preds, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, that line in particular. So that's the more physical team, which you get to earn probably if you win this series. This is a team that you know, this is not that team.
No.
And still, it's frustrating. And, you know, you talk about breaking it up. We don't have time to get into that. We can do it another segment. But then how do you do that? I mean, that's the next part. That's what we get to quickly here if these guys don't turn it around. But I still think that in the offensive zone, I thought that there were times yesterday where they did that and gave themselves opportunities, not enough. They need to do it more. I'm still, in this particular game, it's just the mistakes in the defensive zone. I can't, like, that is just an absolute ticket to be out of this thing right away. And I can't understand how Taylor Hall could ever roam free like he did.
Yeah.
I understand it's snap decisions, but, I mean, you've got to tighten that stuff up.
You do. There's no question about it. And look, it's game one. You win game two. All of a sudden, it's 1-1. You feel okay about yourself. But there are stylistic issues that this core group is going to have to figure out, or this is going to be a short trip to Edmonton.
Are you basically calling this team soft?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to boil it down. Yes. Like to recap the segment, this team right now.
They played soft yesterday.
And
that can't happen.
That's happened. I mean, this is a finesse team. It's built that way. But still, there are guys on this team who don't have to play that way.
They don't have, like, yeah. I mean, there's a core group of players on this team, core group of forwards, that I've seen play differently before. I've seen Ryan Johansson play with an edge. I've seen Philip Forsberg do it. I've seen Matt Duchene do it other places. It's got to happen. And if it doesn't, you're not beating Arizona. It's as simple as that. When we come back, how much pressure is on this core group now to win in game two? And what sort of changes could we see if they don't? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How is your confidence level going into game two now, given how your team performed in the third period there, at least showing a little bit of push in life?
Yeah, it's game two. I mean, we're in a playoff series. I thought it was hard fought. You know, they won the first period and capitalized on their opportunities. We made a push. You know, I think the second period was there. I think both teams competed hard. We had a really strong push in the third period. We didn't capitalize like they did when they had their push. So, you know, it's all about game two now. So we'll take the lessons out of this game, make sure that we're ready to go for round two.
Predators head coach John Hines looking ahead to game two after the Predators game one loss yesterday to the Arizona Coyotes. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning. We'll take your Preds thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, I look at this group right now, and this goes back to a little bit of a conversation we had last week when we were talking about the pressure on this core group, because I immediately think back to what happened after the Predators fired Peter Laviolette. I remember being in the room for the press conference the next day. John Hines is in there, and we're talking to David Poile, and you could sense the frustration coming from David Poile. You could tell, and I don't want to say he didn't want to fire Peter Laviolette. He didn't want to. He likes Peter Laviolette. I think he thinks Peter Laviolette's a good coach. But he had to, because you can't just sit there and fire, you know, 17, 18 players that have been underachieving. The next step, if this doesn't get figured out and doesn't get turned around, there's no way you can bring this group back the same next year. You just can't. And I understand that's more difficult to accomplish now because of the contract situations a lot of these players are under. It's going to be really difficult, I think, to reshape the core of this group. But to me, the responsibility now is 100% on the players. I give John Hines in this series, although, I mean, I'm not ever going to give him a free pass. There's very little John Hines can do one way or the other in this series to influence kind of my thoughts on him. I think he's a good coach. This is 100% on the players. And more specifically, it's 100% on the big money players in this group. Ryan Johansson's making $8 million a year. Matt Duchene is making $8 million a year. Forsberg, $6 million. Yossi's contract kicks in next year. Ellis. I mean, your big money players have got to figure out the formula for what's going to make you successful in the playoffs. They've played that way before. They've got to find a way to get back to that again. Game two, if they play stylistically the same way in game two, I think you got a huge problem. I really do. If you're still playing this finesse game and you're afraid to go to the middle of the ice and you're not going there often enough and really pushing around the Arizona Coyotes, I don't know what to tell you. This is on the players at this point for me.
It's interesting because I agree they have to be more physical. You also don't want to keep taking penalties.
Sure.
You know, it's that balance. I mean, the power play now has two more goals than it had all of the 2019 postseason, which is only six games.
Power play looked great yesterday.
But now this is like the 2017-18 issue. Remember, that team's problem was penalties.
Could stay out of the box. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like the whack-a-mole thing going on a little bit. But, look, you've got to – but there's also – it's the physical toughness and all that, but it's – the mental toughness too.
That's what I'm really getting at. It's having the mentality that, hey, I'm going to go to the front of the net and come hell or high water, I'm getting there. Nobody's going to stop me, and I'm going to get to this loose puck. Arizona had that yesterday. It doesn't mean you're always going to get there. It doesn't mean you're always going to get to the puck and score, but you give yourself a much better chance to do it with that mentality than just saying, you know what, I'll hang out here. Maybe the rebound will kick out here. That doesn't work in the playoffs.
So when you talk about what could happen, now Adam Vingan was over at my house yesterday. I made him brisket nachos.
Look great.
Deviled eggs, some salad. Yeah, I thought maybe he'd eat a little bit more than he did, but he did all right. But we were talking about this because it inevitably turns to this. What can you do if this does go this way? If you're David Poile, what can you realistically do? And I don't know. He may be boxed in here. Last year there was an obvious move to make.
Sure.
An obvious move. You had to get another center, and you knew what P.K. Subban's contract situation was, and you figured that you could probably dump that salary, and that's exactly what you did. I don't know. There's just not an obvious move to me now.
Right. No.
And we're not there yet, but I'm just saying, it takes one game. And you're like, okay, what is at stake here?
Well, I mean,
it's probably something for somebody.
We're one game into the playoff here, and they put themselves in a must-win situation. You can't lose game two. Like, you're not going to win three in a row in this series. I'm not going to say you're not going to win. It's very unlikely you're going to win three in a row in this series. So you're already in a situation now where you're going to have to win game two. And maybe they do. Maybe they go out there and they win game two and they get things figured out. And they look like the team that I expect them to look like heading into this series, and then you move on from there. But there were just some glaring issues yesterday that I did not expect to be there, that were there, and that is alarming to me because I figured this team was past that at this point. And to see them come out in the first period and play the way they did yesterday was really concerning. And you have to know, like, Joe, if you're a core member on this team, like if you're Kyle Turris locked into a long-term deal, Duchesne to a lesser degree, but Johansson, Arvidsson, you got to realize, I think internally, heading into game two, how much pressure is on you now to win this and to turn this thing around. Because, yeah, it may be difficult in the offseason if they lose this series to change up the core of this group too much. I bet you David Poile tries.
Yeah, oh, he'll try.
I bet you he tries.
Oh, he'll try. And it could be, you know, there could be a contract just bought out. I mean, there's different things you can try to do. No, he'll try. I still think, I mean, look, Johansson is a guy who I think would be of interest to people. I also think that you tread lightly when you talk about moving him.
Sure.
Just because – look how long it took to get that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a really look, what did you think about him yesterday? I mean, I thought
he's okay.
Was fine.
Yeah.
But there's another level. It's kind of like what John Hines said about him in training camp. Yeah. Another level.
Yeah.
But I thought that line created some opportunities in 5-on-5. Can do more, though.
Oh, there's another level they can get to. I mean, there's no question about it. And Johansson, to his credit, there were a couple times yesterday where he was exactly where he needs to be, and that's right in front of the net. I mean, he had one shot.
He had a great
literally
chance.
from the crease. That's where you got to get to if you're him.
And actually, Kemper, I thought that he was going to get the, you know, the the little pop in after Kemper gave up a little rebound, but Kemper somehow held on to that. But yeah, that's where you want him, and you want him doing that more.
Yeah, and it's got to be, you know, 5-on-5. I thought the Jofa line, they're okay. I didn't think they were great. I thought certainly room for improvement there. Let me put it this way. I didn't think they built on what they did in the exhibition game. So you've got to get back to that point and continue to build on that. But it's just, it's easy in a 5-game series, I think, to have urgency about this type of conversation that we're talking about, because we knew how important game one was going to be. You lose game one in a 5-game series, I mean, your back's against the wall pretty quick. And naturally, when you think about not only the way this season has gone from a regular season standpoint of the inconsistencies, you know, firing Peter Laviolette, bringing in John Hines, and then you couple that with the trajectory they've been on since they made it to the final. I mean, they won the President's Trophy the year after, beating the second round in the playoffs, game seven. Okay, you just chalk that up. It's game seven, you lost to a good team. Next year, you come out, regular season's okay. I mean, you win the division, but you never look great. All of a sudden, you lose the Stars in the first round. This year, regular season is what it is. We all know what happened. You lose to Arizona maybe in the qualifying round. It doesn't take a rocket scientist at that point to figure out which way this trajectory is going.
Yep. There's no doubt about it. It's a bad trend.
Let's go to Bob real quick, who wants to weigh in on the Preds. Bob, thanks for calling in to 102.5 The Game. Go ahead.
I have a couple of questions. Do you think, as absurd as it might sound, that the Predators might have been feeling too good about themselves after they had done well in that exhibition game? And secondly, do you have any theories as to why the team goes into those funks like the one that they went in yesterday and, of course, the one we all remember from the Winter Classic? And I'll listen off air.
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. I appreciate it.
We were praising the heck out of them Friday. Oh,
we were, man.
Good, baby. I did say this is 5-2 Zona.
You
this
did say
guarantees
that.
5-2 Zona. It wasn't quite 5-2.
Look, I'll say this. If they were feeling too good about themselves after that game against Dallas,
just go home.
Shame on them, because after the regular season they had, they don't have any reason to feel good about themselves. Let's be honest here.
No.
There's not a guarantee if they finished the regular season that they would have made the playoffs. So there's nothing really to feel good about there, I think, from a regular season standpoint. One game as an exhibition heading into Edmonton, although it was really good. I liked what I saw in that exhibition game. There's no reason there, if you're the Predators, to be feeling all that great about yourself.
Yeah, there's a different pressure into the second part of the question. One, when you come out here, everybody knows you're supposed to beat this team.
Sure.
Look, we've seen 2-12s now win game one, too, by the way. I mean, this is going to be a wacky playoff. The NHL playoffs already are.
Sure.
And this is just – even I think the recipe for even more craziness. But for the Preds, it's inexcusable to let yourself just go into that funk, like you said. Now, the other team's part of that. They felt good. They had it rolling. I mean, it's one team pushes, the other team recedes. But you can't let it happen for 10, 11 straight minutes, taking bad penalties, making huge mistakes, and falling into a 3-0 hole. And I don't know the answer to that, other than I think you hit on it earlier, Robbie. I mean, this has to be a mental toughness thing with this team. You said leadership, maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe they don't have enough of it. I think Roman Yossi is a good captain. I think, you know, he may not be the classic Shea Weber captain, but I think
thing,
he's a
though.
Good
like,
captain.
Yeah, like, look, from a leadership style, honestly, there's not a ton of difference between Yossi and Weber. Like, Weber wasn't sitting on the bench just yelling at people
all
the time.
Yeah, I think it's just that Weber – and you know this better than I do, because I didn't cover Weber long, but there was a command thing. Maybe it's just like the physical
he's a man
stature
yeah.
of him. A little bit of a – and I think Yossi's just a really nice guy.
He is, yeah.
But, yeah.
I think he's a fine
captain. Shea Weber said that too. In fact, I actually talked to him on the phone a few months ago, I guess now. But, you know, and he said the same thing. Like, it's about the same, you know, approach, you know.
Yeah,
it's just – but so I think it's way bigger than that. It's a lot of guys who, for whatever reason, aren't responding well to this. And some people will say, oh, because they got paid, or there's some chemistry issue, or they're soft. You know, I don't know what it is, but if it happens anymore, they'll just be home, and probably somebody will be gone.
When we come back, we'll continue this discussion. Also, get into a line that I thought was very disappointing yesterday. That's next. This is
Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Monday morning and recapping Game 1 between the Predators and the Arizona Coyotes. And Joe, we were talking last segment about leadership. I don't want people to kind of get the sense that I'm bashing Roman Josi as a captain, because, matter of fact, the opposite is true. I think Roman Josi is a really good captain. But it does beg the question, like, once things start to unravel, like they did yesterday after that first goal from Arizona, what is happening on that bench? And obviously we don't know the answer to this, but what's happening on that bench with some of the guys on this team, like Josi, like Johansson, like Forsberg? I'll even throw Duchesne in there, because he's going to have to be an important part of this group moving forward. What are they doing? What are they saying to each other? Try to get them out of it. I mean, that's got to be a part of it, because it's one thing if this happens, you know, every now and then in their game, that you just kind of chalk that up to what it is and you move on. It's the NHL. Things happen. This has been a consistent part of their game all season long in terms of things going poorly, and then all of a sudden the wheels fall off for 10 to 12 minutes at a time. And that, you're just not going to win consistently that way. It just can't happen. So what do we think's happening on the bench, or what needs to happen on the bench when things start to unravel and you can kind of see it coming? What's got to happen with this group to get out of it quicker? I mean, get maybe a shift or two where you're getting pushed around, but you've got to change that momentum much quicker than they've been able to do, surely yesterday, but at a lot of times this year.
I don't know. What do you say? I mean, it's an interesting question, but I just, like, is there a magic phrase on the bench? I think it's more, I think it's more what you do than what you say in those moments. Maybe I'm wrong. Like you can't go Newt Rockne real fast,
sure,
to me, and like everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing. But it's when you're on the ice, you got to have poise. Like, you got to have toughness and pushback and all that, but you also have to have poise. And yeah, I think poise really lacked during that stretch yesterday. So that it's always an interesting question on leadership and teams going through bad stretches, and what do you do? I think often there isn't much that can be said. I mean, sometimes there's one player on a team who's screwing up, and maybe someone needs to grab that player and slam him against a locker, you know? I mean, I guess yesterday – like, maybe someone could have yelled at Ryan Ellis in the first period yesterday. You know, a guy who you expect to not make the mistakes that he made that were a big part of this. But I don't know. It's a tough question. And I think that as a group, lines and defense pairings just have to – when it's your shift, you have to – step up and, like, try to stop the momentum. I know it's hard because, again, the other team feels that too. And so they're feeding on it, and that's exactly what it looked like yesterday. It's like, wow, that team's way better than that team. Shift after shift after shift. And eventually it manifested itself in a three, you know, in two more goals to make it 3-0.
A big part that stood out to me yesterday, Joe, and I look at not only yesterday but playoffs past of the last couple years – the Predators have really needed a second line to go out and generate and be dangerous. And you thought maybe heading into these playoffs, the Duchesne line with Turris and Granlund, the elements may be there from a skill set standpoint to make an impact, particularly in this series against Arizona, where it's not like you're going up against, you know, trees out there like you are in St. Louis and Anaheim and some of these bigger teams in the Western Conference, Winnipeg as well. I thought that second line yesterday was pretty much a non-factor. I can't really think of anything that Turris, Duchesne, Granlund did together 5-on-5 that's inspiring a ton of confidence in terms of offensively what they were able to generate.
Well, there was one sequence midway through the second period. It was 3-1 at this point. So Turris blocks a shot in the defensive zone. He gets a steal. He lays it up to Arvidsson.
That's right.
Yep. Just misses. Yep. You know, so this is all about right around the 10-minute mark in a few seconds. So then they keep it in the offensive zone. Ekholm makes an unbelievable diagonal cross-ice pass to Turris, who has Matt Duchene alone. Duchene is in that hard area, and he's tapping his stick on the ice, and Turris shoots it instead. Kemper save, clears, and then the same shift, they actually have another opportunity, and Turris passes to Duchene. I think he should have shot it. Ekholm was also near the net. They had one shift where they were all over it, and, you know, again, I mean, Turris, I give him credit for making some plays in there. I think it was like, you should have passed here, you should have shot there. But that was the one shift that stood out to me. And it was important because obviously you got a chance there, a real chance to make it 3-2 with a long way to go. And instead, it's 4-1
right. Before
you make this late, you know, push. But I agree that in general, you want to see more from those guys. I thought Granlund had some moments, but – every year.
That's another penalty, too. We haven't even talked about his. I mean, he held a guy behind the net in the offensive zone.
Right.
Can't happen.
Offensive zone penalties, yeah. Man.
It was on the boards behind the net. It was literally as far away from your net as you can get holding somebody. Can't happen. Just stuff like that. It was undisciplined play. And, you know, from a makeup of a line, like, you know, Duchene, Turris, Granlund, they're not your biggest line, obviously. Like, in terms of, like, playoff driving to the net and all this stuff, it's probably not their game. Like, they're just not built to do that. But possession wise and being able to enter the zone with the puck on your stick, create from there, they are very skilled at that. I just didn't see enough of that yesterday. Now, Duchene picked up, I think, a secondary assist on the power play on Forsberg's second goal. Like you said, they had that one shift where they're okay. They had a couple opportunities, but you just expect more from that group. After not seeing it the majority of the year and talking about the reset and the talent we know that group has, you expect more impact from that second line than we saw yesterday. And not to say the first line was great, but they had their moments where they looked okay.
Yeah, and every year it's, can they get another line now that line's back together? Can they get another line that can support it?
Right.
And it's got to be better. There's got to be more. Because I don't anticipate, well, we'll see what happens in game two, but I don't anticipate John Hines. I think it's rolling with this.
I do
probably.
Too.
Yeah. Barring just something so, I mean, I guess if they get rolled in game two, maybe it's Pekka and goal and all kinds of line changes up and down the lineup. Eli Tolvanen's the top six. I mean, who knows, you know, but you would think they're probably rolling with this.
Got a text in on the text line that says, at what point do we put blame on Josi for lack of bench leadership? 2 years ago, they brought back Fisher for the locker room. Love Josi, but maybe he isn't doing his job to keep the team together. Got another text that said, the Preds have always struggled with Arizona, even when they're good. It's going to be tough. I think you're going to get a lot of that over the course of this next week here, you know, depending obviously on what happens the rest of the series. But the criticism with this team, I think, from this fan base, they're kind of fed up. They're ready to see some results. They know the organization has done everything you can possibly do to make sure that this team is successful from a financial standpoint. David Poile has put together a competitive roster. He's paid guys who need to be paid. There's not much else they can do. It's on the players at this point.
Well, okay, David Poile's made some mistakes, too.
He has.
He's had some moves that have absolutely not worked out. I mean, he's been on a cold streak largely since the Subban deal. But, yeah, obviously he's built this team. There's a lot of good players. He's paid them. He's got a lot of team-friendly deals. They should be way better than they are. The Josi thing, you're right, is absolutely going to be – I'm actually pleasantly surprised that there hasn't been a bunch of, like, put in Pekka right now.
There's a whole bunch of that on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah. And the Josi thing is, I think it's fair to ask about the leadership. I struggle with what the impact sometimes is of a captain. Like, it's your room.
I think
it's
really
a
overblown
lot of different guys. Yeah. Like I don't think it's a problem. Maybe are there better captains in the NHL? I'm sure there
probably,
are.
Probably, yeah.
I'm sure there are. But I don't think that's it. Again, Roman Josi, if he's not playing well and he's your captain, then I have a bigger problem with it. If he's not setting an example like this is how you go about your business and being an elite player, then I have a bigger problem with him. It's the guys who aren't performing. These are all pro athletes. They all know each other well. It's the guys who aren't performing that I think you look at.
No question about it. When we come back, Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. Looking forward to have our friend Corey back on the show, talking a little Titans, little Preds, everything going on in the world of Nashville sports. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I have been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.